What up? Welcome to the Soul Cast. Today's guest is POS. POS is a rapper, an anarchist, a dad, an artist, amateur shoe designer. This is a fucking awesome interview, and it was really cool to sit down and talk to POS. Until this interview, I don't even think I've really ever said more than a couple words to each other, and so it was cool to just kind of dig in and get a feel for where he's at. You know, we're going to talk about the influence that crime think and anarchism has had over his life. We're going to talk about, you know, just his general philosophy and approach to life. We're going to talk about music stuff. We're going to talk about Doomtree, their collectively run record label run out of Minnesota with him and his friends. We're going to kind of talk about like the mechanics of that and how to make a long-term project with friends in a collective setting work over a long period of time, which is something I tried and failed at, but hey, that's a whole nother story. You know, we're going to talk about his health issues he had a few years back, where he had to get a new kidney, and he was, you know, saved by the generosity of friends, and got a kidney replacement. We're going to talk about that experience and navigating the healthcare in this country. And we're just going to talk about, you know, general trends that are going on in the world, and you know, what we see on the horizon. And you know, we talk a little bit about parenting, because POS is a father, and I'm a new father who just trying to figure out as I go along. But yeah, so if you like this interview, I highly recommend check out POS's music. He's a one-of-a-kind rapper, you know, raps over really kind of artsy, experimental hip-hop shit, but gives it like this real punk twist to the way he harmonizes and shit in his music, and there's nobody doing stuff like him. So I highly recommend folks pick up his new album, Chill Dummy, out now on Doomtree, and check them out on tour when he's touring the United States in September with this other artist, Blackie, who's also dope as fuck. So, yeah. It's a whole bunch of other shit we talk about, but that's like a primer. So, yeah. So check out this interview, and without further ado, I present to you P.O. motherfucking S. POS, Steph Alexander, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a lovely summer day in Minneapolis.
Oh man, I'll never forget the summers I spent in Minneapolis. I'd like open a bag of chips before I'd be halfway through them. They'd be like soggy. I don't know how y'all do it.
I mean, it's a muggy existence, man. That's just something you gotta know.
I don't know. Let's just get into it, man.
Sure.
Let's talk about anarchism.
Okay.
How long have you been an anarchist, and how does it inform your life?
I think that the notions of it came into my life maybe 2004, 2005, and then I think that I fully subscribed to it maybe in 2007. Yeah. I think somewhere in there, I think all the, you know, books and thinking and kind of going over the different, I guess, ideologies I had bounced around in my head and everything I had read and looked on the internet, and if I was trying to see what lined up with me the best, that was it, you know.
Nice. Was it, were there a lot of anarchists in Minneapolis? Was there like a thriving scene there?
I'm sure there is. I don't really deal with the scene, any real scenes at this point. So I think I don't go to Wobbly's meetings. I don't do meetups. I don't I don't participate, man. I spent a lot of years in my life trying to get down, being a hard Democrat, trying to be a part of it and make a difference. By the time I found like the ideology that worked with me the most, nothing that I described the hardest or hard to, but like the one that lined up the most, I was already kind of into a different mindset about how I was going to go about it, just in my interpersonal life and how I treat people and how I allow myself to be treated and how I participate with society. You know, like, we live how we live. I'm a artist. I gotta sell stuff to exist. I've gotta participate in capitalism, whether I want to or don't want to. And I don't really work with like the anarcho-capitalist thing so much. And it's not there and people can't like say that's what they are and how they are doing life. And you know, everybody believe what you want and do what you want, but in real life you do what you gotta do and you survive and you exist where you are and you participate in whatever level you do, you know, just because you have to survive in it. Capitalist patriarchy doesn't mean you can just invent what you call yourself to continue to participate in that. You know, we all do it begrudgingly. The people that know and pay attention should do it. You know, I don't know that there needs to be new titles for all that. Sorry, I'm dominating this.
Oh no, that's all. I mean, man, I can talk all day. That's all I want. I just want to hear. I mean, because I just spent the last, I don't know, week digging through your music and pulling out all these lyrics, and
nice.
You know, it's just. You know, I mean, you've identified as an anarchist a lot longer than me, and so I feel like your thinking about it is like, it's really nuanced. And if you say it was 2004 when you really started digging into it, like that's about the time you had your first kid. You know, you don't get to opt out of work.
My first kid was, it was a few years before that. I was 17 when he was born. So I want to say 2000, 2001. Yeah, so that's a little before that. But yeah, you do, you know, I came into the way that I thought about the world through, I don't know, just everybody. Everybody has their life leads them into certain situations and how they deal with those situations based on the last situations they were in, you know, informs the next situations they're going to be in. And I grew up on punk and hardcore and listening to people that talked about anarchism and talked about this, like, you know, Kurt Cobain was like, even for the mass giant pop star he was, if you read his interviews, he was on like super counterculture, super, you know, fuck this. But it didn't seem so contrived, you know. And I was a kid, but I absorbed it really hard. So I feel like the first things I thought about were already leaning that direction. And then, you know, you read the news, you see what's going on. I came of age during, you know, some peers. Like, it's hard not to, like, land on something if you're the kind of person that thinks, you know?
Totally.
Or
you could just land, if you could think the wrong shit and just end in the wrong place. Like, it's like the Democratic Socialists. It's like the DSA is, like, blowing up right now. And I'm like, God, like... Don't you remember the Green Party? Don't you remember every fucking election? Like, what do you expect to happen? You know, like, what are you hoping is gonna get universal basic income? You know, you think they're gonna give us health care? Like, get the fuck out of here. That's crazy.
See, to me, to me, it is crazy, but the whole thing's been crazy, and it's these little incremental steps, you know?
Right.
Like, to me, seeing people think like that and have that be a thing that's kind of cracking right now is hopeful, and it's kind of exciting because you're seeing fucking soccer moms thinking about shit that they've never thought about, ever.
Right.
You know? You're seeing people out protesting. You know, you see on Twitter all the time people who are mad, who are just like, where the fuck were all these fucking white women when blah, 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 blah? You know, like, I see you want to protest now, blah, 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 blah. And everybody's fucking pissed at the people joining the ranks. That's fucking stupid. That's stupid. Who cares where they were? Who cares where they were? Who cares what they were thinking about? This is what they're thinking about now, you know? And, you know, just like when we were kids and the band that we discovered blew up and we were like, fuck that, why do you guys get to know about my band? Like, the band gets really big, their crowd swells up really big, and then their crowd dies down. But even when it dies down, the crowd size is bigger than it was before, you know? I just think that whatever things in pop culture or whatever things in popular government are drawing people out that weren't coming out before, we're going to need them eventually, you know? So whether it's democratic socialism or a white guy gets shot by cops or whatever it is, like, I understand the impulse to be mad at the new people, but it's not helpful, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about democratic socialism too. This is like the first time people are talking about socialism without it being immediately a bad word. And I feel like that, however stupid and slow, it's still progress, you know?
Yeah, the Bernie bros, they're playing their role. Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, are you talking specifically about that Australian woman who was shot in Minnesota?
I mean, I wasn't specifically talking about her. I wasn't talking about her at all. I was talking about just the idea of it. If we want to talk about her, it's a whole different thing. But, you know.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, that's a problem with radical politics in general. You know, it's like this attitude of, like, elitism. Like, oh, I've read some sacred text, so I can speak in a language that you're not going to understand. And, you know, you're oppressive because you didn't read this book and you don't have the secret language.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, it's hard, man. It's really hard. Everybody is so mad about so many things. Everybody's anger is valid. And where do you start? How do you cut through? How do you hop in? You know what I'm saying? Are you hopping in enough or at the right places and blah, 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 blah. You know?
And you can't do enough anyway. It's just...
Yeah. It is a endlessly frustrating world. But, you know, you gotta be able to see past it sometimes.
I mean, whatever. We still got Game of Thrones. We still got PlayStation 4. We got plenty of things.
But
Trump can't take away all the dogs. Trump can't take away the puppies.
Yeah, but everything is problematic, depending on who you are and how you look at it. You know, Trump can't take away the dogs, but somebody's mad that there are dogs as pets. You know, like there's no way to be happy with everybody, and there's no way to please everybody. There's no way for everybody to feel like everybody's got it, because every single person on the planet believes with their entire heart that they are correct, you know? And they've lived an entire life that reinforces that, you know? Like, and you can't do shit about it, so it's hard to, like, be mad about it, you know? Like, everything about me, everything about you that makes us believe we're right about whatever we think we're right about, we're right. You know, like, everything in our life has informed us that, yes, this is right, this is true. But every single person on every side of the world and every spectrum has the same thing, you know? Like, every fucking racist has been raised to believe that that's the fucking way to be, and every instance in their life has fucking pointed that same way, whether it's their dad or, you know, they encounter somebody of a different race and spout off the shit their dad said, and then immediately their feelings are validated by the anger that comes back at them. Like, it's, yeah, everybody,
it's crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, and you know, as like a white guy or whatever, you know, I grew up with like racist uncles who,
yep,
you know, you grew up around racist jokes, and then they'd say, oh no, but we're not racist, and then, you know, you get older and you see people like Louis C.K. or whoever, and it's like, and you realize, actually, no, that shit's like not supposed, that shit's not funny, you know, like, that shit's not funny.
Yeah. Which, hang on, which thing are you saying? Your uncle?
any of it. Like, just like, you know, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, none of it. Definitely the uncle and the cousins, you know, rest in peace.
Yeah. Rest in peace to every racist uncle. And yeah, and, you know, problematic jokes or whatever. I feel like it's hard, dude. It's hard. You know, like, Dave Chappelle, Lucy K, these are all people that, like, right on that line for the sake of comedy, and there's always the comedian that's going to be able to figure out a way to defend that, and somebody who's going to be mad at it. But at the same time, I know people who heard Louis C.K. jokes and realized that they were racist because of the context he puts those jokes in. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Like, people learn about themselves. People learn about themselves when they get to see it without fear and in those contexts. You know, I'm not giving anybody a specific pass or anything like that, but at the same time, like, it takes kind of like those big pop culture things to sometimes shake people into realizing what's up.
Yeah, or,
you know?
Or a good meme.
Or a good meme. Very true.
Let me ask you about crime thing, Days of War. It's Days of War, Nights of Love, right?
That's one of them, yeah.
How many copies of that book did you give away with your...
No. You're thinking of Work.
Oh, that's the one?
The Work. Yeah, the workbook was the one that I got out with We Don't Even Live Here record. They made a abbreviated 100-page version as a free download with every purchase of my record. And then my pre-order, you could, if you wanted to, pick up a Work. I think we got rid of like 1,000, maybe 800. I don't know. Yeah, and then we included the capitalism pyramid scheme poster in a lot of the pre-orders. And yeah, I think Crime Think has a lot to offer people who are interested and angry, you know, feel like they, especially the older books, cover a side of anarchism that is definitely an easy place to start if you're looking for, from their older books, like way old books, 10 years ago, if you're looking for books that like Evasion, is pretty much like a dude chronicling his life living outside of society and traveling all over America. It's an amazing book, and it's very inspirational. And then things like Days of War is like the ABCs of what anarchism is. You know, it's like, it's all really cool entry-level stuff. And then later on, they definitely got into like breaking down how certain structures work and kind of leading you to more advanced thought. But, you know, like, I was a kid that like wanted to make bombs and blow shit up. You know, like, It took me a while to grow out of that and realize, well, that needs to happen, but it needs to happen alongside, you know, every piece. It's got to be every piece. It just be going and blowing things up. Like, for every peaceful, massive peaceful protest, there's got to be smaller, far less peaceful protests, kind of anchoring that one. And there also needs to be people working in, you know, in the beast, you know? Like, it's just not as simple as you do this and then this happens. It's got to be everything at once.
Or as you say, diversity of tactics.
Diversity of tactics, that is what we say.
But I actually really like less peaceful. Because I just feel we're getting so pissed off at, like, democracy now and shit. Because, like, every time they talk about anything, it's always this nonviolent protest. And it's like, what do you mean? I saw people throwing tear gas canisters at the cops. Like, I saw barricades. I saw fire. Like, why are you calling it nonviolent? Like, why do you have to put that adjective?
Because a lot of people really only believe in that. A lot of people don't. I don't know. I don't understand. It's hard to go out there in the world and, like, advocate for violent revolution when you yourself don't want to die. And you know that people around here don't want to die. You know? But in your heart of hearts, you know that, like, nothing actual happens until people are fucking dying. Like, that's history.
Right. And, of course, people say people are dying.
Yeah, that's not what I mean. I mean, it's just not. I'm sorry. I know that people are dying, and I have respect for everyone out there doing their entire life this way. People who are putting their entire life out there and on the line for the thing that they believe in and what they want to fight for and what they're dedicating their lives to. I have nothing but respect for that. You know?
Right.
There's just not enough yet. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I really thought that after Trump, like, we were just going to see, like, some sort of Arab Spring kind of thing, and it felt like it. And now it's...
No, I mean, we are, but in a different way, in that fucking same way that all this happens. You know, like, to me, Obama gets elected, and a lot of us expected fucking riots in the street and burning and fucking mayhem. Tell me that you don't know people who expected mayhem, right?
Right.
Tons of people did. But instead what happened is there was a giant libertarian explosion. There was a giant new movement of people going out and fucking rallying up, raising money, and getting elected, and it maybe resulted in Donald Trump. You know what I'm saying? Right now, what's going on is we're not seeing any kind of uprising or American Spring or any of that, but we're seeing fucking soccer moms and fucking, like, baseball coach dads for the first time ever running for local politics on this massive, massive scale. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's... We're seeing fucking Rachel Maddow and fucking, like, all these left-leaning people stoking these flames of, like, hey, we're gonna go have a resistance. You know what I'm saying? Like using the language that has always been down here, but out in the mainstream, it's just so fucking... Green Day, you know what I'm saying? Like, they they just scrub all the punk rock off of what we all think a resistance is supposed to be, and then they show you what it, like, actually looks like out here. You know, there's something like, I mean, I'm just gonna try to remember these numbers. These are the wrong numbers, but it's something like, instead of, like, 40 some new people running for office, there's something like 185 people running for new offices. You know, Like, this is unprecedented. And it's not the way that I want to see it done. It's not the dream of this giant fiery resistance revolution. But I see, I bet we see some mainstream democratic changes, you know? Also, coming with that new groundswell of people who aren't afraid to say that they're socialists. It's too little, too slow, but it's not happening. You know?
And every time, you know, the elected officials and people who, like, seize the means of power can, you know, prove how very little power politicians have, it just, you know, provides an opportunity for people like us to point out, well, this is why we are anarchists. This is why we believe in creating our own power, and that's way harder. Like, that's not easy.
Yeah. So. And especially doing it from within the structure that already exists, man. It's like fucking mouse cage city. You know? Fucking hamster wheels. Fucking...
Oh man. Total aside, but I we live in an old house, and so, like, when we moved in, we had all these mice, and I was like, oh, the ethical thing to do would be to, like, catch all the mice at once and put them in a cage, and because it was the winter, you know, and then we'll just move the whole family at once. And then it got to a point where we had like 15 mice in there, and there was like a little hamster wheel in there, and like all the mice were going crazy and trying to get on it at once, and so like they'd get their paws caught in the wheel, and there would be like blood all over the cage, and I was like, alright, I'm gonna take these guys to a park now. My hope,
yeah,
of, like,
dude, that's insane,
keeping the whole family together. Like, I wasn't trying to create a Guantanamo. Yeah,
that is incredibly, incredibly sweet. That's just adorable of you to try to keep your rodent infestation as a nice cohesive family.
But, you know, I don't know if there's like a metaphor there to be drawn about the system or not, you know?
I'm sure there is. We might have to dig for it, but I'm sure.
Man, you know what I love about Crime Think? I love the poetry of it. You know?
Yeah, man, it's beautiful and it's romantic, and I feel like a lot of anarchists with a lot of humor will look at Crime Think as like a total joke or some kid stuff or whatever, and they are, you know, allowed to think what they want. But I feel like that romance and that, like, spirit of, like, an adventure and, like, what if is a lot of the reason why people get inspired to look at different ways, you know?
Right.
I feel like oftentimes people come to anarchy or come to, like, hard countercultures like this through things that are either filled with romance, like Crime Think, or, like, sex, you know? Or, like, yeah, those are the kind of things that people tend to get free on, you know?
Right. Or,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Or, yeah, veganism.
Veganism isn't fun, though. It's a thing that happens, and it, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a thing that happens, and you've come into this way of thinking, so this is a choice you're gonna make.
Right.
It's not fun, right. You know? Like, if you are sick of your job and you pick up a really good book that has really poetic writing about what it would be like to keep your job and just run across America living off nothing, you might be inspired to do something like that. If the writing's good, if the poetry's right, if the ideology sits with you, you might be inspired to do that. Same as if you, like, meet a really beautiful woman and she inspires you and she's awesome and everything about her is perfect, and then you realize that she already has a boyfriend and a girlfriend, but she really likes you too. And if you like her enough, maybe you're gonna look into what that might be like. And then just the idea of looking into that seriously opens up the entire world of like, oh shit, maybe all these rules are stupid and no, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I just feel like there are romantic and happy and exciting things that can kind of like unlock what the world is, and you move from there, and then you can get serious, and then you can study off it, you know, then you can find things that are maybe less romantic or less exciting, but just bolster your ideas and thoughts. Maybe that's when you find veganism, you know what I'm saying? That's like, that's right. that's how it feels to me, you know.
And I feel, and you know, man, I feel like you capture that feeling in your music a lot too, like especially on like certain videos, like obviously Fuck Your Stuff, like you had a blast making that video.
That was super fun. Yeah, man, we went to my really good friend Alex, just knows, just a long time urban explorer artist, writer, just knows every spot, and brought us out to this one place that takes most of the video. And it's yeah, it was the best time, man. Just that whole year promoting that record and making the videos for it. There's a one promo video that I can't remember what it's called on YouTube, but it came out before the We Don't Even Live Here album. And me and Alex and Mike and a few friends of ours just went into a giant, very tall, abandoned, you know, green elevator, just like a mainstay of urban explorers out here. Got up on the roof with our blurred out faces and looked at our beautiful city. And I think the quote from Alex is, "People pay so much for this view, but we don't."
I love that.
And it's just, it just kind of encapsulated the vibe of that record, the vibe of how I was feeling in my life, and kind of how I do feel, like kind of the way that I choose to move through this world, you know,
not
for better
to,
or worse.
Not trying to win, because I don't respect the game.
Yeah. Exactly, man. Like that's as real as it gets, man. I feel like,
as a wise man
so
once said,
I don't know how wise I am, but I know that I've lived a lot, and there comes a point where it's like, God damn, what are you celebrating? Like, which of your victories is actually making you happy and moving you forward? And if the game feels fucking rigged and stupid, why are you trying to win instead of break it, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, or just do things your own way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of our daily life and routines are entirely based off of shit that we didn't pick or have a say in, you know? We're living by old rules and old stigmas and religions that we don't care about, just embedded into our daily lives, you know? And it doesn't make any sense, and we still do it. We learn more and more every year about how people work, and we still fucking ignore it to go with this old traditional stupid shit that just isn't working for most people. Nobody's happy, you know? And people aren't happy because they're trying to fit into something that they didn't fucking pick, you know? I mean, nobody has to be born, and that's one thing, sure. But the idea of going to a fucking shitty school until you're a certain age, and then picking some college that costs tons of money, and then picking some job you don't like as like just the everyday prescription somewhere in there, you pick up the one person you're going to be with for the rest of your life. Just don't think that that's everybody's destiny, and I don't think that it's what everybody should be striving for. I think people don't even consider that as an option. Like, maybe this wasn't my choice until they're like way, way in it, you know?
Right. I mean, it's easy to say it's never too late to change, but I mean, it's like, man, at a certain point in your life, you know, when you have a house and you have kids and you have all the shit, I mean, I think you can make a change at any point in your fucking life.
Absolutely. I think so too. I think that it's necessary to always be doing it, but there's so much fear there. You know, like, I know incredibly talented people, but I already have a job. I already have a pretty nice apartment. They've already got, you know, their shit together from all outside appearances. It doesn't make sense then to give it all up to go try something that would be way better and more fun. You know? Yeah. Like, they've got the effort part down. And to me, I feel either you are resourceful in those traditional ways, or you are pursuing art, or pursuing a dream, and looked at as irresponsible, and by all accounts, probably actually irresponsible, you know? And then you gotta figure out that balance to make an actual life, or a good life, you know?
It's, I mean, it's like, and to me, I feel like that's like important, like an important revolutionary practice. Like, you know, what do you have to offer somebody? More misery, you know? Like, if you're a miserable person and you're gonna, you know, your job sucks, your life sucks, and so like the thing you get joy from is going out into the streets and resisting on the weekends, then you go back to your shitty life. It's like, that's not, to me, like, I think, like, I feel like a revolutionary when I'm hanging out in my backyard reading some poetry, staring at sunflowers, you know? Like, I'm like, I'm happy right now. This is so stupid. But, you know, I might be broke as fuck, I mean, but who gives a fuck?
That's super real in one way, you know? I mean, I, you know, and you know now because you got a kid, but you can't be broke as fuck anymore. Right. You could be broke to a certain point, but there are some things where you gotta turn it up, you gotta fucking live it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go do it that way that everybody says you're supposed to. You know, there's unlimited hustles.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you know, that's a great, excellent segue into another one of my questions. Doomtree is can you talk about, like, Doomtree as a collective and really how it has survived? I mean, you don't have hip-hop collectives that survive more than, like, 2 years. Like, how do you have a hip-hop collective that's survived as long as you guys have?
Yeah, I gotta say, I have no idea. I think a large part of it is, you know, after you make it a certain amount of time, there's maybe just like a unspoken determination to make it work. You know, I think we all chose this in a real serious way. Like, I'm choosing to do this. You know, we're this far in, this has become my life's work, it looks like. You know, like, we make this work. But I don't know how, really. I know that we're all, you know, actual friends. Like, we didn't come together because we were all the different, like, we need this guy, he sounds like this, we need this guy who sounds like this, we need a girl. Like, it wasn't like that. We were all just, you know, we all spent, I don't know, we made the crew and then fucking moved into a house together and then moved into a different house together. And I don't know, I just think there was a determination before music, before business. It was like, we're friends, we're cool, you know? We started off the first fucking 7-8 years. Everything was done by unanimous vote. Everything, you know? And then after a while, we go through a thing, we lose a few members, we do a little restructuring, and then it's not everything happens by unanimous vote. We all kind of know the vibes that we are going to. We all trust Laserbeak with the money. we all trust DESA to write a press release, so maybe we don't all have to vote on that stuff anymore. You know, like, I don't know. I just think, just like any relationship, you know, checking in, whether it's one-on-one with certain people or getting together at a State of the Union, the crew, or whatever it is, I feel like it was a constant work.
But it probably really helped that you were friends first. Like, that's probably the foundation. Do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think it could have worked? If
I mean,
kind of like the
general, definitely.
Really, after a couple of years.
I think there was definitely times like that. There's parts where not everybody got along or talked. You know, you just made it work. Me and Dessa, for the first couple of years of Doomtree, were dating. You know, deeply in love. Hard stuff, hard breakup, and then, like, we're broken up. I never want to see you again. See you on Wednesday at the meeting, you know?
Oh, no.
Like, so, like, yeah, man, like, none of it was easy. None of it. I mean, a lot of it was easy. Playing fun shows, having sweet times with your friends, getting drunk, like, that stuff's easy. But, like, making it work, making it stay, it wasn't easy. I just think that... I mean, I, for one, need all those people. Like, those are my people, you know? Like, I haven't had the easiest life. Those are the people that I count, if I'm going to count on anybody, is the people in Doomtree and, you know, my kids' moms.
Right.
You know?
That's awesome.
So, it's way bigger than music, you know?
And I feel like, I don't know, when I listen to the early Doomtree stuff and I listen to, like, stuff that people have gone on to make, it seems like everybody has just improved so much and really sort of, it just feels like everybody's, like, invested in each other's success. And I look at, like, the production credits for your albums and it's like you can tell that it's not just you alone in your room on your laptop recording, and then, right? I mean, there's, like, some collaboration there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is recording in your room alone, but immediately after that is it's like sending it out to everybody. Hey, what do you think of this? Hey, is this cool? Hey. You know, like, we're the most insecure of bragging ass rappers alive ever.
Totally.
You know, like, all of us hate every single thing that we do. Until we don't, and then we love it. It's the best thing ever. And then a couple of years later, it's like, oh my God, what the fuck am I doing? It's just, you know, I'm sure you have some of that same kind of up and down struggle. None of us were battle rappers. None of us gave a shit about fucking real anything. We just were honest and made it sounded cool to us, you know?
Totally.
It was never about... best rapper alive, you know, like, fuck you, you're dumb. You know, like, I can't think of any funny ways to insult anybody. It's just not my shit, you know.
Yeah, well, that's good. I did my run at Scribble J. I mean, I used to be a battle rapper, actually, but I know I got bored, you know.
I literally couldn't do it. I just can't even think like that. I can't bring myself to quickly think of insults or, like, figure out a way to really fast brag. Like, when I make songs, I sit down for a few hours and I carefully think of every single word and pattern. You know, when I freestyle, I rap like a little kid who's never rapped before. And when I freestyle and try to insult somebody, it's a dumb joke.
Totally.
it's not where I fit in the world.
Yeah, Mike Eagle had talked about, oh, we need to have, like, complimentary battle raps.
Yeah, him and Cecil Otter both independently came up with that, and I think that we went on tour with Mike. That happened in the back.
Compliment jam. You're a great dad. Your dill pickle recipe was amazing. I wish I had some more of that. God, why I can't summer...
Your spell is intricate and amazing.
The flavors were so rich and bold. Well, and here's another thing that we didn't really talk about. So you you had a, I'm sorry, I think it's your kidney failed, right?
Yeah, kidney. My kidney did fail, yeah.
Was that because of drinking, or was that just how you were born?
No. No. I think a lot of people get the liver and kidney confused, and I think you can get serious liver problems if you drink a ton. I was never a really big drinker. You know, I'll indulge and have a time, but that's never been my thing. I think I had kidney problems. I had extra protein show up in my pee when I was getting a physical toward the end of high school. And they said, oh, yeah, you got extra protein in your pee. That's a sign of kidney problems. Take this medicine. There's going to be a problem later. But nobody ever could figure out what was, I think, the best that they can figure out now, the fact that my bladder has some reflux issues. So I've, you know, I'll drain the bladder like 85%, and then my bladder will spasm without me able to feel it. And it'll shoot piss back up into my kidney, you know. So there's a chance, we're not sure, but there's a good chance that I spent most of my life kind of, you know, every few keys filling my kidneys up with piss, which destroys them, which means a new one. So I got a new one. My life is now.
Oh my God. How was dealing with that with healthcare? Like, did you have insurance?
I mean, I was able to get insurance. It took a lot of work, and it was a pretty sucky experience. But once I got it lined up, I was able to get it worked out. I got a Doom set up with GoFundMe for me, and that helped me with some bills, medical expenses, and living expenses, because I had just released a record and set up a tour, and then had to cancel the tour and not promote the record, and kind of shift life gears. But I was able to line up insurance shortly after that, and get the max benefits that an old man would get from Obamacare. Like, when you have kidney problems, they don't treat you like you're in your 30s. They treat you like you're 104. And you just, I mean, so much of it was sitting in hospital rooms, in hospital waiting rooms with like 65, 75-year-old dudes. Just like, what are you doing here?
Crazy. And you could have died, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could have died.
And then, like, but, like, what's crazy is, like, so you did the, your homies set up a GoFundMe, you know, it, yeah, you know, you raised a lot of money from your supporters, and then some fan, right, came out and was like,
not a fan, but more than a fan, a dude I went to high school with, a guy, Mark Potter, like, we were kicking into high school. We weren't like super close, but we were cool. And we would, you know, go snowboarding together, or if we saw each other at the place, link up and kick it. You know, always like a real cool, chill dude. He actually hit me up on Twitter and was like, hey, what's up? I just saw in the paper that your blood type is the same as mine. What's the number to call? I gave him the number, and like 2 days later, he hit me back up on Twitter like, hey, I'm a match. Let's do this.
That's so, isn't yeah, that crazy?
It was... Dude, it was nuts. It was totally insane. Totally insane.
Mutual aid. I mean, that's like the highest form of mutual aid. Like, I'm going to give you a piece of my body.
Yeah. Not just that, but, like, you know, he ended up signing up for all these, like, after studies and all this stuff. He's just, like, a truly, truly good dude. Really, really pulled it out for me. And just as a good example for the world, you know, he said in some newspaper article, he was like, dude's got kids. It just felt like the right thing to do. And, like, that was all he had to say about it. I was like, damn, man.
That's cool.
Really cool. Really cool.
So I had another question about the giving away of your... Well, I just want to say, I'm glad, I'm happy for you, man. Like, I was watching that, and I was like, whoa, this is some real shit, you know? And to hear that, you know, to hear that it worked out, like, that's...
Yeah, I mean, it was... I mean, I don't know necessarily what the technical definition of miracle is, but if I could think of one, that's probably it. A lot of people have really spent a lot of time on dialysis and kind of waste their lives, and I was able to take, like, 3 years off, which is amazing. That's nothing. And, you know, in the span of a lifetime, that's nothing. And a lot of people spend, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years on dialysis and then die, you know? And dialysis, I gotta tell you, is... it's fucking horrible, man. Dialysis is the process of... Okay, when you have kidney problems, what kidney does is it cleans your blood, right? So if you have... anything from, you know, a piece of food to breathing some air to a glass of booze, you gotta clean your blood. You gotta get that shit out of you, and that's what kidneys do, you know, as a part of a bigger process. What dialysis is the process of manually cleaning your blood, you know? So there's a couple different ways of doing it. I got the easier one, but even the easier one is a fucking nightmare, you know? So I don't know, man. I feel incredibly, incredibly lucky, and you know, I try not to take advantage of my days.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. And so now you can tour again, right? You can tour. You can do all the same shit. So
I can. I don't know that I can. I don't know that I could do everything that I could do before. I definitely. Steps you back, but I do feel like I could do all the stuff that I want to do.
That's great. I mean, it's not the same, but that's kind of how I feel about being a parent. People are like, oh, what, you coming out with us? I'm like, no, I'm just going to stay home. It's fine.
Yeah, but that's also being 30s, you know? Like, get pretty tired of the same old shit.
Or pushing 40 in my case.
Hey, I'm almost there.
Yeah, I'm almost there.
I'll be 36 this year.
Yep, getting old, man. Getting old.
Getting old, man, but I personally like it way better. But I've always been the kind of person that was looking forward to getting older. And as I get older, I spend my entire 30th year telling people, you're fucking crazy. Get the fuck over. I'm 30 years old, man.
It's funny.
I spent the entire year of being 30 saying, are you fucking serious? I'm 30 years old. Go away.
My new joke, you know the saying in the 60s, don't trust anyone over 30? My new take on that is don't trust anyone under 30.
Yeah, don't... yeah. Don't trust anybody that's ever listened to Radiohead. just because everybody's heard Radiohead, you know?
Yeah, it's
a it's a joke.
Young people, maybe not, though. You know? For them, that could be...
True. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, is that what Lil Uzi Vert rapped over?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, what? Cold Lake, Minnesota. Man, you're not even from Minnesota.
No, that's Lil Yachty too, I think.
Oh, big difference.
I don't know that there is, but I know that one is Lil Yachty.
I actually, I don't know, like, that's a good tangent. I actually, I don't know, like, there's like a weird melodic shit going on with Lil Yachty that I find to be kind of interesting sometimes.
Sure, I couldn't tell you, man. I don't listen to rap music. Like, ever.
What are you listening to these days?
Podcasts, audiobooks, I don't know if you heard the band Yob. I like Yob. Yeah, I like technical, super metal, and like hard German techno, and rap from Korea or Japan, or pretty much any place. I can't really tell what they're saying.
Yeah, it always sounds good when you can't hear what they're saying.
Yeah, man. It's just, it's hard, dude. I feel like trying to give zero passes to musicians that are, you know, misogynist or promote the downfall of black culture or that promote pretty anything. There's so much music out there. I just won't spend my time listening to trash people anymore. So that's hard. So, you know, lots of instrumentals, lots of metal,
lots of podcasts.
What are your favorite podcasts?
There's tons. I'm a big fan of 99% Invisible. Big fan of the classic This American Life. Listen to Reveal. Listen to Code Switch. Listen to Intercepted. Listen to the Crime Stick podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to some more mainstream ones too. I listen to Jorgen, depending on who the guest is. He himself, I don't know how to feel about all the time, but he is definitely interested in tons of the same stuff as me and asks pretty good questions of lots of people. So,
who is that?
Joe Rogan.
Oh, Joe Rogan.
He's like a... Yeah. And he's, you know, he's an older white dude, so he has some weird ideas about a lot of stuff, but his interests are pretty varied, and as long as he's not interviewing like a fighter or a white supremacist, I usually check it out. Although if he does interview somebody that leans white supremacy, he usually asks some pretty good questions, which puts them on the spot. He's not really bad at that, which I appreciate. He interviewed Alex Jones, and he's friends with Alex Jones, and the most recent time he interviewed him was after Alex Jones started getting a lot of these, you know, people treat him as a legit thing sometimes now. So having Joe Rogan stop him every 10 minutes and be like, whoa, shut up, explain that, what are you talking about, is helpful for listening to a guy like that, because he's a bonkers maniac who just goes to have kind of a normal dude stop him and be like, yo, you sound crazy, say something that makes sense. It was kind of helpful. A little tangent.
You know, I love talking about podcasts and thinking about them, because it's like, well, A, it's because I'm doing it, but also it's because I feel like it's like community radio talk show for everyone. It's this new medium where, you know, where like you don't have to listen to the same bullshit. Like, you know, you want to learn about whatever fucking crazy niche. It's like you can, I want to learn about how life evolves on asteroids. Like, there's a whole podcast with 100 episodes about that.
There's definitely something for everybody. I've been a pretty huge podcast listener for probably six years now. I've been using Stitchers. I got weeks and years logged into this thing. Just because I love absorbing information and drowning out my own thoughts equally. So it's pretty solid.
Yeah. Just got a couple more questions, and then I'm going to go.
Sure.
I don't know what I'm going to do. Do whatever I want. I'm my own boss. You know, actually, I'm not my own boss. I have a boss, and he's 4 months old. And,
yeah. How you loving it?
I fucking love it. I mean, I thought the first month was actually really hard, and it was like being on an international flight that just with never-ending transfers, and I was just like, at the end, I was like, oh my god, I've ruined my life, and then it just got easier after that, and it's just like, I mean, all the cliches are totally true, you know?
Oh yeah. It's amazing. It gets really, 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 really good. And then it gets really, 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 really bad.
When does it get really bad?
I don't know, man. I feel like if it really comes down to it on that 13th birthday, you might want to take that pasture. Call it. Yeah. It's been a good run, kid. I'm just kidding.
Totally.
But around 13, it does get pretty tricky for a while. Yeah, man. At a certain point, they go from being this cute thing that you teach everything to, and they think you're the coolest person in the world, to being their own person and trying to navigate what that's like to have to be around some dude in your house.
Totally crazy. I mean, it's one of these things that people always say to me is like, oh, you have a kid now. Like, he's got, like, my anarchist friend's like, oh, I see, he's a little anarchist. And other ones like, oh, I can just see him making beats and rapping. I'm like, fuck all that shit. He's gonna do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
But your son, he started rapping, huh?
Yeah, just totally, totally separate of me. He wants very little to do with me and his rapping. I brought him on tour, and he didn't want to be on any of the bills. Like, he wanted to be on the shows. He didn't want to be announced ever. You know, he's trying to do it without me.
Yeah.
And in our city, which is really small, it can be kind of a hindrance to have me as your dad if you're a rapper, I'm sure. But whatever, he's pretty awesome, both at rapping and as a dude. But kind of hard for teenagers is what I was getting at.
Yeah, hard R, right? That's the funniest name.
Hard R.
That's such a dope name.
The best name. Yeah, dude. He's a smart kid. Very smart. And I don't know. I feel like he will have a lot to say. It's cool.
Well, he's growing up around some open-minded people who will hopefully, you know, show him the way. Walk that road if he chooses.
That right there is the full sum up. Did you get any good questions from the internet?
From you? I mean, I got some good ones. I got, like, ask him about his rat.
I used to have a pet rat named Filthy Francis Fink that lived in my sweatshirt when I was in ninth grade and went to school with me. And ate chips and was pretty gross. That's probably what they're talking about.
Yeah, that rat. And the other one actually is just totally blew my mind. And it was about you being like this connoisseur shoe designer.
Yeah.
What can you talk about your skills as a shoe designer?
Yeah. I'm still pretty new at it. I've been doing it for about a year and a half. As designing and hand making leather or canvas shoes. Yeah, it's a cool meditative hobby slash thing I really, really like doing. I don't know. I make all kinds of clothes. I make shirts and like easy pants and shit like that. But my very favorite thing to do is make shoes. And maybe I will show people what they look like out in the world in the next couple of years. But yeah, that's not to do with my not rap spare time.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I mean, the only other question that I feel like I got a couple times from people was asking about, you know, are you still playing in punk bands?
I'm still writing punk music, but mostly at home as like a hobby. And oftentimes I'll write parts of punk songs and I'll end up recording them and sampling them and making beats out of. A lot of the rap beats that I make based around playing a bass guitar or a guitar and then having a cool part and then going there with it. I don't see myself putting a serious band to attempt to start touring and, you know, build up a band, but I do write a lot of that music and I will most likely put some of it at some point.
That's cool. Yeah, like so. The Because, I mean, your shit's, you know, it sounds really punk. So it's up there.
Yeah, I mean, it's aggressive jams, even in the chill ones.
Okay, well, we didn't even talk about your new album. You're about to go on tour with Blackie. You know, do you have anything to say about your new album?
I mean, yes, it's really good. I don't know. I guess if people are stoked on the conversation that we had about Anarchy for the first part of this interview, they should listen to the record before this one called We Don't Even Live Here, which focuses the hardest on that. Whereas my newest record, Chill Dummy, I'm more kind of shaking off the cobwebs of being holed up in a house by myself, recovering from surgeries and the mental waste that you put yourself through when you're by yourself all the time, getting better from surgeries and bad slash unlucky slash too lucky at love. Yeah, it's a more introspective record, but I think it's really good. I think musically it might be my favorite of my records. Yeah, if you want to hear anarchist, political minded stuff, maybe listen to We Don't Even Live Here or Never Better, and a new group called Shredders with Sims and Laserbeak and Paper Tiger. We have a free EP and a brand new song that came out yesterday. Check out that stuff.
Wait, that's you're on that as well?
Shredders? Yeah, that's me and Sims doing all the rapping. Oh, and wow. Paper Tiger and Laserbeak making all the beats.
Those motherfuckers make some beats.
Oh my god, they do. This is probably the best batch of beats that they've made. I'm not saying that because it's the newest, but I'm saying it because it's fucking true. This is some future space jams. So.
That's cool. I can't wait to hear. I didn't even know that you had a new project out. It's awesome.
Yeah, man. Check it.
All right. Well, any book recommendations other than the Crime Think ones? It doesn't have to be a political book. I mean, anything you've been geeking out on over the summer?
Yeah. I listened to the last John Ronson book because I'm a really big fan of John Ronson. I'm reading Chuck Klosterman all the time. I don't know. Look up John Ronson. Look up Chuck Klosterman.
What's the John Ronson?
All the way through. So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
Oh, nice.
It's pretty good. It talks about, you know, people, this modern age of Twitter shaming and the aftermath and people who deserved it versus people who maybe didn't versus, I don't know, all this stuff. It's a good book. I like John Ronson's writing voice a lot.
That's cool. Yeah, that sounds like a subject that we don't explore enough until it's too late and someone's life has been ruined.
True.
Yeah. All right, well, so if people want to check you out online, you know what?
Pretty much everywhere. It's, yeah, right, POS. It's YEAHRIGHTPOS. So, yeah, right, POS. That's on Twitter. That's Instagram. That's Snapchat. That's probably Facebook. I don't know.
It's great that you don't know.
I do the Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and Ander, Doomtrees, Ashe, Doomtrees, second to Brain. He handles the Facebook for my mental health.
And you're going on tour. It's going to be your first big national tour in a minute, right?
Yeah, I had one in January, February, but this is the kind of the follow-up, roundup, cleanup for the Chill Dummy record before we start off whatever first, which I do know, but I can't say. There is so much music coming. Just, you know, stay tuned. Doomtree.net, shredders.com. Shredders spelled with four D's.
Yeah, man. Internet. Check it out.
Cool. Well, are you guys coming to Denver?
Yeah, I'll be there next month.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking. I've never seen Blackie live, but I like his music, so I'm excited.
I haven't seen him either. I'm really excited that he was able to come on this one.
Well, I look forward to catching y'all and, you know, hanging out. And good luck out there. And, I don't know, enjoy the rest of your summer.
And you too. So it's a baby.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time, man.
Absolutely, man. Talk to you soon.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to this podcast in iTunes, tiny URL, Soulcast. The music you're hearing in the background is the new shit from POS and Sims, Shredders. And if you want to hear more shit like this, check out channelzeronetwork.com. And I'm out of here.